Hi, everybody. This is Rejuvenation with Eve Harrow on the Land of Israel Network. I'm home. Yes, it is April 2nd, 2017, the sixth day of Nisan, 5777, recharged after a beautiful Shabbat with my family. More than two Shabbats outside of the Land of Israel, and I just really have a problem. I just feel like my soul is not getting the proper like energy that it is. So now I'm good to go for the week that's to come, the week before Passover, with so much that there is to do. Oh, speaking of Passover, I will not be working on Passover, but I organized a trip for One Israel Fund on Thursday of the intermediate days of Chol HaMoed with Arya Leifert down to Hebron and all kinds of great areas. So if you happen to be listening and are in Israel during Passover, check out the One Israel Fund page. There's still room on the bus. So you won't be with me, but you'll have a wonderful trip. You know, you just can't have everything, everybody. Anyway, three great interviews coming up that I tape recorded a few days ago when I was in Washington, D.C. at APAC. One with Michael Mostyn of B'nai B'rith Canada. The second one with Nadia Al-Noor, interfaith activist. Very cool interview. And the last one with Yishai Fleischer after the event that we all put together, a bunch of different organizations put together celebrating 50 years of rejuvenation of Jewish life in Judea and Samaria. You like that name? Yeah, rejuvenation? Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I mean, they know. We know. We all know. So I spoke to Yishai. He was the MC and just about the event and where we go from here. So I hope you enjoy the show. And let me know. As always, you can write to me, Eve, at thelandofisrael.com. So away we go. Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow at APEC 2017. And I am delighted to be with Nadia Al-Noor, writer, interfaith activist, and speaker, whom I've never met before, but I was highly recommended to go and find. And it turns out that I accidentally just sat at the same table that she was at. I was calling her, and the woman across the table's phone starts to ring, and it was Nadia. So I guess we were meant to be together. So first of all, thank you so much for agreeing to the interview.
Thank you for having me.
You have a really interesting story. This is radio, of course, and not, I can't send everybody your picture, but you're sitting here wearing a beautiful, incidentally, hijab, and not too many of those in the APEC room. So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got here.
So I'm a Muslim, and everybody in the Muslim community really is brainwashed against Israel from birth, the mosques, from the parents, from the schools, from everything. We get the message that Israel's evil, Israel, blah, 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 apartheid, whatever buzzword you want to do. I wasn't raised Muslim. I'm a convert, actually. But when I joined the Muslim community, that is the message that I got. And also, when I started undergraduate college, that is the only message I received. I hadn't heard about Israel, really, until I went to college. And the overwhelming message was that Israel was bad. Israel was evil. Israelis are monsters. And so, of course, I believed it because nobody else was saying anything counter to that. So I believed that, and I actually kind of started to get a bit anti-Semitic because of it. I was upset, why does the Hillel get so much money? Why are the Jews so privileged? Why are all the, I got all these ideas, just because of my hatred of Israel, I just started to take it out on Jewish people. I didn't ever like hurt anybody, but like I would get like angry, like, oh, those Zionists are so rich, because they think that they could go in there and steal land. I'm basically just the average anti-Semitic or anti-Israel college student. And then in my senior year of college, I'd converted to Islam at that point, and I was trying to join, sign up to use the kosher kitchen at my school, because kosher food is, almost like halal, and I accidentally signed up to join the Israel committee, and I was like, oh, and the lady who ran it was like the scary Israeli lady that you can't say no to, so I'm like, okay, I'll go to the meetings, but only to see what these Zionists are doing, so then I could use it against them. And then I met Zionists, and I met Jews, I met Israelis, I met people who served in the IDF, and I started to realize, these people are nice people, these are good people. Maybe everything that I've learned isn't that true, because, I started hearing about experiences in the IDF, and I'm like, these people, they're not bloodthirsty monsters. So I started learning about Israel, and I started softening my views, and I took a class on Israel, and I ended up becoming pretty pro-Israel. when I was a, it was like November of my senior year. I had been getting to the point of being pretty pro-Israel by that point, but I wasn't like vocal about it. We had a gay Israeli speaker come to speak at our campus, just about being gay in a Jewish society. And there was a giant protest. Jews were getting bullied because of it. They were afraid to go to class. They were crying. The protest had to be canceled early. The event had to be canceled early because of the protest. And I just saw my Jewish friends. They were so scared. And I just couldn't stand for it. So I started to speak out for Israel. And in July, I think, of 2016, I wrote an article that went viral. It was called Palestinian Terrorism and Muslim Hypocrisy, an Open Letter from a Muslim Woman. It was basically me calling out Muslims about why don't we condemn terrorism against Israelis. It was right after a 13-year-old Jewish girl, her throat was slit in her own bed because somebody broke into her house and killed her. And I was like, why aren't we condemning this? Why are we trying to justify this? Why are we ignoring this? A child was killed. And it just kind of blew up and everyone started, contacting me and talking to me. And now I speak a lot about Israel. I write a lot about Israel because I know that as a Muslim and being a Zionist, my voice is very unique and a lot more impactful than, say, a Jewish person speaking out for Israel, because people don't expect a Muslim to be pro-Israel, so they'll listen to me and they'll listen to the message about Israel and how Israel's a pretty nice place. Israel's just a country trying to defend itself.
Have you ever been to Israel?
No, but I am going in June. I'm going with an American-Israeli LGBT organization called A Wider Bridge. Mm-hmm. They are taking me to Israel, and then I am having an internship with them right after I get back.
Wow. So get ready, because you're going to really see something for yourself. I mean, I can tell you, as someone who takes people around Israel, it's really a life-changing experience. But you're a very brave young woman. I mean, you're sitting here in AIPAC looking clearly like the devout Muslim woman that you are. Are people coming up to you? Are you getting any reactions? Or everyone's just like, oh, hi, how you doing?
A lot of people are coming up to me like, oh, have I seen you on the internet? Have I read your stuff? And I'm like, yes, you have. You've seen me. So I've been getting a lot of that, random people who know who I am, but I have no idea who they are. I was kind of afraid that people would get upset. I am one of two hijabis here. So I was afraid that people would think, maybe I was a protester who snuck in or something like that. I was even able to do my prayers publicly, and nobody bothered me. I've been getting a very positive message here of togetherness in politics, in race, in faith, in humanity. And I really think that, the theme of AIPAC is togetherness, and that there's not an anti-Muslim message. There's an anti-hatred message where Muslims and Jews and Christians and Hindus and everybody can get together to support the Jewish state and support a state, the only democracy in the Middle East. I think that, I'm really enjoying myself. I've learned a lot here, a lot of nice people. I haven't met anybody who's given me any problems.
Well, I hope it strengthened what you seem to have understood anyway, that Judaism is accepting of people. I mean, yeah. We're not, there isn't the reverse of anti-Semitism. We're not automatically anti-Muslim and automatically anti-Christian. When it takes a political stance, or as you said, when there's terrorism involved, then, of course, it's something that makes us wary. But in terms of the religion, it's not, the religion itself isn't a threatening aspect. Someone like you, for sure not. You mentioned that you converted into Islam. Can I ask you about that? That's an interesting choice to make.
Okay, so I used to be a pretty radical atheist. I was raised Catholic, but then I, decided religion wasn't for me.
I hear that from a lot of ex-Catholics, by the way.
Yeah. It's pretty common. You either become like uber Catholic or you become an atheist. I hated religion. And so I got a boyfriend in my first year of college, and he was a devout Christian, and he kept trying to convert me to Christianity. And I'm like, not happening. So we had a lot of religious arguments. And eventually I'm like, Christianity isn't the only religion out there. look at Islam. Islam has Jesus. You know, go just look at other things, then get back to me. He looked into Islam and ended up becoming Muslim. And I'm like, oh, no, now I have to deal with this. But I just watched him become a much better person. Like, he was not a bad person to begin with, but he became much more just, much more righteous and charitable and kind and patient. And just, he just became a different man, a new man. And I watched it happen to other friends of mine. I have a friend who's an ex-neo-Nazi. He was not a good person. But then he embraced Islam, and now he's out there, you know, advocating for Jewish rights in his country. I watched people change, and I decided, you know what? Maybe I should start looking into this religion instead of just attacking it at first, like I attacked all religions. I should ask some honest questions and look into it. I should read the Quran. I should go ask an imam some things. And I end up falling in love with the religion, and I converted too.
So why is it that you think, now that you're on the inside, you're a Muslim, you're not attacking from the outside, you've embraced it, and maybe specifically because you embraced it by choice, you weren't born into a Muslim family, why is it, do you think, that there's negativity about, you know, what is going on with Islam that is showing its nasty face instead of the face that you have seen in your now husband? Yes,
my boyfriend.
Your boyfriend. In your boyfriend, and you said a lot of these friends who were not going down a great path and then who found Islam and became much better people for it.
I'm not sure exactly. There's a lot of cultural baggage there that I don't have.
Because you're not an Arab.
Because I'm not Arab, but it's also, you know, Pakistani, things like that. You know, there's a lot of anti-Semitism in a lot of the Muslim community. Malaysia, Israelis are banned from going to... Was it Malaysia or was it Indonesia? I think it's Malaysia.
Right.
There's just a big problem, and I think it comes... There's an Arab supremacy problem in the Muslim community. And, you know, so everybody thinks that Islamic culture is Arab culture, even in the Muslim world. Muslims from all over the world try to adopt Arab culture, and I guess because there's such like a brotherhood with the Arab Palestinians, you know. In Islam, we have this idea that you have to stand with the Ummah. The Ummah is the Muslim community. You have to stand with our oppressed brothers wherever they're suffering. So we hear, you know, oh, Israel's doing all these horrible things, and we have to stand against Israel and destroy Israel so that we can, you know, protect our Ummah. You know, there's a lot of problems with that. We're not talking about any of the giant problems that are happening in the Muslim community in which we're oppressing ourselves. But, you know, let's not digress there. There's a lot of false religious teachings, too, against Jews in Islam. There's, like, this fake hadith that people like to quote. It's like, oh, you know, Jews, you know, at the end of days, the trees and the rocks will yell out that the Jews are hiding behind here and we will kill them. That, you know, that's a fabricated hadith, but everyone loves to quote that, and people, you know, even some Muslims are like, it says that in the Quran, and it's like, well, show me the ayat, show me the verse where it says that, and then they're like, oh, well, it's not there, but yeah, it's not there. You know, the Quran says that, you know, Jews and Christians and Sabaeans and those who do good deeds and believe in God will, you know, be rewarded for that. It doesn't say, you know, kill Jews. It doesn't say kill Christians. It says, you know, if people break, you know, people don't, okay, about Arab culture, back in the time of the Prophet Muhammad, war was just a thing that happened. Everyone was in tribes, there were lots of wars, so everyone knew how to fight. And the wars in the Quran is because people broke peace treaties and tried to kill all the Muslims, and the Muslims were like, well, we're not gonna sit here and die. So, you know, if you break the peace treaty, that's a pretty big deal. You're going to die because of that. There was a Jewish tribe that did break the peace treaty. But most of the Jewish tribes and such, you know, worked with the Prophet. In the Charter of Medina, it guarantees equal rights for Christians and Jews. You know, there's a lot that people don't notice, that people don't know. Like, there's a hadith that says the Prophet was talking with a bunch of people and a funeral procession walked by, and the Prophet stood up in respect, and somebody said, oh, no, brother, that's a Jew. And the Prophet said, but was he not a human being? So, you know, there's...
So what you're saying is that Islam has to some degree been twisted in order to justify the cultural anti-Semitism that many Muslims were living under?
Definitely. A lot of Islam has been twisted today. A lot of, you know, so-called reform movements that have happened have actually, like, really messed up the religion. There's problems in the Sunni sects and the Shia sects. I'm Shia, which is, you know, Iran. But it's also Azerbaijan, and Azerbaijan is one of Israel's closest partners, you know. So it really depends on what you bring to the religion. If you want to be a douche, you know, pardon my French. I was going to use an even worse word there. But if you want to be mean to somebody, you're going to justify that somehow. And there are a lot of fabricated things out there and interpretations of the Quran in which you could say, oh, look, you know, we should kill all the Jews. Because you're taking things out of context. You know, it made sense at the time. You know, if you're going to be in war with somebody who broke a peace treaty, you know, you're going to be at war with somebody. It doesn't mean just go randomly slaughter people or, you know, yeah, you don't do that. And, you know, a lot of even Muslims throughout history have, you know, had this problem. It's you know, terrorism and stuff has become a much bigger problem since the 1980s, though. And anti-Semitism has just, because of the existence of Israel, like, anti-Semitism in the Muslim community has just, like, skyrocketed since 1947.
So do you think, now you became a pro-Israel activist, which is why you're here, before you became a Muslim. Do you think it's made you a better Muslim? Like, you've been able to come in without that baggage of automatic hatred of Jews?
Definitely. I started learning about Judaism. I took classes on Israel and Judaism. And the more I learn, the more I can apply the lessons to my own faith. Judaism and Islam are incredibly similar because, you know, it all comes from the same God. Islam is just, you know, like a clarification of things that were lost over thousands of years, essentially. It's not, you know, we don't consider it a new religion. We're just like, okay, this is the same message that Moses preached, the same message that Abraham preached. We're just, you know, either, you know, we believe that there are, like, certain people have certain laws at certain times. And so some laws had to be updated, some things, you know, but, you know, if Jews follow their religion, that's fine too. So, you know, I love learning about Judaism and Israel. I find that it does make me a better Muslim. Yeah.
So I'm excited for you that you're coming to Israel, and I'm glad that AIPAC has only strengthened your conviction that the Jews are good people and that we respect you and your faith. I'm kind of feeling bad here that when you decided that you had found God, that you didn't come into Judaism, because you sound like really awesome. But on the other hand, I'm thinking that you have more of an impact as a Muslim, because you can try and maybe change some of the perceptions of the people within your newly found religion, which is definitely what we need.
Yeah, my voice as a Muslim is a lot more effective than a Jewish person, because everyone expects Jews to be pro-Israel. If a Muslim is pro-Israel, it's like, whoa, what is this? I can reach, you know, Muslims with my message. It's an uphill battle for that, believe me. Oh, my God. But I could also reach Jews and show them, you know, there are good Muslims. It's not, you know, what the media portrays us as. A lot of people, I believe most people are good people.
I wish I agreed with you. I'm a little bit older than you are, so I'm not so sure. I think most people are good people, but don't make a stand enough. They just, like, kind of float through life, the silent majority. And these days we need good people to really stand up and fight for the goodness of the world, because the bad guys always seem to have the energy to do what they want to do.
Yeah, even I, you know, get fatigued and stuff. Like, when I see all the terrible things happening in the world, I get really depressed sometimes, and I wonder, you know, is what I'm doing worth it? Is it making any difference? You know, can we even fight against evil? There's so much evil. The Quran says that good and evil are not equal, though the abundance of evil may astound you. So, and also the Quran says that God never gives you a burden too big for you to bear. So anything that life throws at us, you know, God will be on our side to help us if we turn to Him. I believe that for Muslims, Christians, and Jews and such, you know, we turn to God, He will help us through no matter what. And I believe that it is the will of God that Israel exists, because, you know, the Jewish people have gone through so much, and God has never, ever let them die out, you know, so He's not going to let, you know, Iran kill Israel and destroy all the Jews. He's not going to let that happen, because He's protected the Jews through 5,000 years. He clearly seems to want them to be alive. So, you know, I think it's the will of God that I also became Muslim. I feel like if I had been raised Jewish, I would have stayed Jewish. But I think Islam is the path for me.
Wow. Well, thank you for framing God into the God that I also believe in, the warm, loving, gentle God, the good God that doesn't want people to die for his name or hurt other people in his name, wants people to live in his name and make the world a better place. You're a tremendous advocate for Allah, for God, or for Elohim, or for whatever anybody out there calls it. And I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and to talk to my audience. I think it's going to be very, very interesting for them to hear your voice.
Thank you. I just want to say, you know, for anyone listening, go out there, build some bridges with people who are different than you. Go meet Muslims. Go meet, you know, people who have a different skin color, who have a different background. Go out there, build some bridges, and you will find, you know, that, you know, there's a lot in the world that you had never had any idea, had never known. Your life will be a lot more richer.
Couldn't have said it better. We can't give up. For God's sake and for our own. Thank you so much, Nadia Elnoor. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation at APAC. Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow at APAC. Been a really whoa day. Got so much to tell you guys, but I'll do that later. I am sitting right now with Michael Mostyn, who is a Canadian. Of course, you're going to find a Canadian at APAC. Michael, how you doing and what are you doing here?
Terrific. Great to be here. I guess, so well, you can ask what's an Israeli doing here as well. We're all people that are concerned with supporting the state of Israel. And we're here to be with our North American cousins in showing that support.
So you have an official position? You work for an organization in Toronto?
Yeah, so I'm the Chief Executive Officer for B'nai B'rith Canada, and we're coast to coast in Canada representing the grassroots Jewish community, and we've been doing so since 1875.
Okay, so for those people who don't know, what exactly is B'nai B'rith? I mean, I remember growing up, you know, B'nai B'rith organization and BBYO, right, is your youth arm. But you've been around for what? This is like 150 years. So what exactly you do? And I also understand that in Canada, it's a little bit different than it is in the United States. Like you're more of an umbrella organization there, where we have here in America, they have a few different organizations, and you cover some more territory, like I believe with the ADL. So what is exactly, you know, B'nai B'rith in Canada?
Sure. And that's a great question, and you're not alone. B'nai B'rith is sort of like a brand like Coca-Cola, but sometimes people don't know exactly what it is. We basically stand on two pillars. B'nai B'rith. One is community and the other one is human rights. So in Canada, we operate affordable housing for Jewish seniors and for the non-Jewish community as well. We have food basket programs on the holidays. We do a lot of mitzvah type projects. That was really the origins of B'nai B'rith when it was established in 1875. Every small town in the country would set up a lodge, and as new Jewish immigrants were coming into the country, they'd help each other out. They'd set up funds for scholarships for each other, bowling leagues. And eventually it grew into more of a modern organization, professionally driven. And so we continue that strong, positive community mandate. But at the same time, we have become, through our League for Human Rights, sort of premier defenders for fighting against anti-Semitism and intolerance in Canada. We have the League for Human Rights. We produce an audit of anti-Semitic incidents every year. We've been doing it for 34 years in Canada. And those are the numbers whenever you hear the U.S. State Department, the OSCE, Stats Canada, the Cantor Center report out of Israel, when they're referring to the number of anti-Semitic incidents in Canada, we're the ones who keep those audited numbers. And we also have an anti-hate hotline. So on a day-to-day basis, just regular grassroots people will call our hotline. So whether they're facing anti-Semitism on a university campus, in the workplace, wherever, they'll call us and we try and help them through those problems.
So, I mean, I assume that you're having problems on the campus in Canada, just like they're having in the United States and in England and all over the world. Concordia was in the news a few years ago already for for intimidating, really, and not allowing, I think at the time it was Bibi Netanyahu, for coming to the campus. So do you have a special program for work on the campuses, or your general program is with the students there too?
Yeah, we've established B'nai B'rith on campus, and that's we work with all sorts of students, so any independent student organization or any pro-Israel student organization will get calls from the students, and we try and help them out, particularly when they're dealing with issues such as Israel Apartheid Week on campus, the BDS movement. We're there, we have many legal experts, and we'll help the students to deal with those issues and deal with whatever student council resolutions might be coming forward, helping them to develop and implement a strategy to help defend the Jewish kids on campus.
So what kind of anti-Semitism do you have in Canada? Is it more like the traditional anti-Semitism, you know, that we've dealt with for over the years? Is it more Arab kids that are coming or pro-Palestinian kids that are coming, and it's anti-Semitism cloaked like in an anti-Zionist message? Or is it all of the above?
All of the above. All of the above. We've been noticing a resurgence in white nationalism in Canada. And what's now happening because of social media and the internet, they are now working together in ways that they never did even a few years ago. You also have issues with radical Islam in Canada, just like in North America, generally in Europe. I think you really have, from those two extremes, a lot of the anti-Semitism are probably coming from there. However, anti-Semitism has been around every generation, and it's, unfortunately, I don't think it's ever going to be going away. And so it does somewhat permeate society. And but it's over the last few months in particular, and there's a lot of people in the Canadian media that are trying to say, well, isn't this because there's a new United States president and that there's anti-Semitism? Our numbers show, our statistical numbers show, that there's been elevated levels of anti-Semitism normalized within Canadian society over the last 10 years or so. We very much believe that a lot of this is the result of bad behavior that's allowed to happen on university campuses targeting Jewish students with no repercussions. It's only always going to be a matter of time until it starts bleeding over into general society. We believe we're seeing some of that right now, but certainly the media is reporting the anti-Semitism that's taking place to a much greater extent than they have in the past.
So that's a great thing. I mean, that's what you're about. So as an Israeli, your last prime minister was like so beloved. I mean, we just felt this tremendous sense that he was really in our corner. And now, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you want to answer any political questions here as a Canadian, but, you know, we're wondering what's happening. I mean, because Canada just seems like such a great country. Why would they be anti-Israel? I mean, Israel is in so many ways representative of the Western world. And we, you know, many of us firmly believe that what happens to Israel is going to happen to other countries. We're seeing it in Europe already. Do Canadians see that our dangers are their dangers, or they're really confused, not educated, not exactly perhaps seeing a bigger picture here like that?
Well, there's no question. Our previous Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, was just an outstanding supporter of Israel, and his whole government was. Canada has always been, I would say, pro-Israel, to more or lesser extent, depending on the leadership at the time. We've seen a continuation of that trend, and we're very proud to live in a country that is so strongly connected in with our community and standing up with the only democracy in the Middle East, the State of Israel. And even more important, though, is standing with Israel, not just because of that, but because of the fact that it's right to do so. It fits in with the democratic values, and for all of the right reasons. And it also fits into our alliances around the world with the United States, with Australia, with England, with democracies that are all swimming in the same direction, generally speaking. So we're very lucky to live in an environment such as that. But of course, there's always challenges. There's challenges with dealing with police forces to understand what is it as a Jew when you're targeted for anti-Semitic hate speech, when you're targeted sometimes from religious sermons that are taking place in certain mosques where hatred is being preached against the Jewish community, generally speaking. What do we do to stop this sort of behavior so that the wrong person who perhaps doesn't have the right mental capacity or is just a very influential person goes off and does something awful? We want to stop that at B'nai B'rith, and so try and keep society safe generally, and not just for our community, but for all Canadians and basically for anyone that shares in Western values.
And you've had a couple of incidents, right? There was something in Montreal a few months ago in a mosque. It's unfortunately.
Absolutely. And so we basically, from end to end, we were exposing those particular incidents. We put police complaints in, and we're keeping up public pressure on Canadian government officials to ensure that our community is treated equally under the law from every group, because nobody should be targeted for hatred. No group should be targeted for hatred.
So in addition to local anti-Semitism, just to get back to the Israel piece of it, forgive my ignorance, movements. Is there legislation that's been passed about BDS, about the boycott, divest, and sanction issues where, you know, there are certain countries, I know here in the United States, it's, I think it's not so much federal as it is state by state, is trying to pass certain laws that can't happen, that, you know, that people shouldn't be boycotting Israel. Is what's going on there in Canada?
So in Canada, we don't have acts that you do in the United States, but there have been resolutions, anti-BDS resolutions, and those have taken place both at the federal level, just last fall there was one that took place in the province of Ontario, which is the, the largest province and where many of the Jewish community reside. Toronto and Ottawa are both in Ontario. So there have been very strong statements against BDS by politicians, but there's always a lot more work that needs to be done. There are specific instances of BDS that we've been tracking at B'nai B'rith, for example, organized by certain anti-Israel groups. They'd put stickers labeling products, Israeli products, and sometimes just Jewish products, which also shows the crossover line, because anybody can criticize Israel politically. You can criticize the United States, Canada, any country in the world, but it's the new anti-Semitism is the anti-Zionism where it crosses that line. And I don't think I need to go into the full explanation to everybody that's listening, but we have reported acts such as that to the police, and we're really pushing that because the law needs to be enforced, and it's just wrong when you're walking in and trespassing and putting stickers onto food products. This shouldn't be allowed, and particularly if groups are up there on YouTube posting, this is how we do it, this is how we tamper with products, and encouraging other people to basically violate the law in Canada. So we're taking a very tough stance against that, and we're pressuring government officials to take this sort of stuff seriously.
All right, a few more minutes with Michael, because he just showed me some other cool stuff. He's opened up his computer, identifying the leaders of anti-Jewish hatred. You have done some incredible things to take some really bad people offline. What's going on here? Give me an example of what's happening.
Absolutely. So really what we're trying to do at B'nai B'rith Canada is, rather than just complaining about the anti-Semitism or, you know, speaking up in general terms, we really want to deal with it and do something specific about it to make society better. And so you have to target the worst cases and the worst examples. So as an example, Alfred Schieffer was one of the premier Holocaust deniers in Canada. We went through the Canadian legislation and we just found, you know, even though we have many more hate speech laws in Canada than they would say in the United States, it still wasn't quite crossing the line into criminality in Canada, but it was in Germany. So through our own investigation, we found out that he was making some of these Holocaust denial videos in Germany, and it's against the law in Germany. So we passed this information along, and very recently he had his home raided, his computer seized.
In Germany,
and he is now facing charges in Germany for Holocaust denial. So to us, that was a big victory because he was just out there and all of the like-minded folks, the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists in Canada, they were basically just mocking governments generally, saying, hey, we're going to say whatever we want. We're going to be targeting the Jews and there's nothing you can do about it. But there are consequences for bad behavior and for illegal behavior. And so, I mean, it's absolutely wonderful that the government of Germany treats this anti-Semitism so seriously. And this is something that we'd like to see more of, even in Canada, is because hate speech and indoctrinating citizens to hate anybody, but particularly Jews, we know that there's consequences and it will lead to actions in the future. So it is very important to take a strong stance against hateful words.
Wow. So B'nai B'rith doesn't just have a lodge. You do a lot of good things and make the world safer, I think, for everybody, for Jews and Christians and anybody who could be the target of hate. Okay, so Michael Mustin from B'nai B'rith Canada, thank you for giving me your time. And if you ever get any of these politicians who want to come to Israel and want to see some things that they haven't seen before, you've got my card. So thanks so much and enjoy APEC. Hi, everybody. Eve Harrow, host of Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network, and sitting now with my good friend Yishai Fleischer, who's so much more than everything that anybody knows. And what he was tonight here, we're sitting in the the detritus of a fantastically, I think, successful Yesha event, Judean Samaria event, as part of APEC. So you were the MC. You spoke to a lot of people. You were interviewed by a lot of people. While it's still fresh, let's get down some of your thoughts about the evening, Yishai.
First thing, I don't know what the word detritus means, but we are at the garbage. We're at the Loft somewhere here in Washington, D.C. We just finished an event which brought a few hundred people, a lot of important people here in Washington. And Washington's a place where important people gather. And we had four ministers of the Israeli government. And what we were doing here was we did an event. I have to correct you a little bit. It wasn't part of APEC. It was during the time of APEC. We used the fact that there was a huge gathering of Jews. Is a huge gathering of pro-Israel people and Jews and Christians and others also, mostly Jews though. And one of the problems that we face at APEC and in general is that the issue of Judea and Samaria is oftentimes swept under the rug. And our rights are being eroded. Our claims are being eroded by people that are giving a completely opposite narrative of the truth, which is that we're back in our ancestral homeland. We have every right to live in this homeland. And that alternative narrative that calls us occupiers and thieves and rapists and every other word and colonialists is the one that's actually starting to win the day. And you would expect that organizations like APEC would attack that head on and would say, the settlements, these are the heroes of today. This is the new generation of the kibbutz movement. These are the folks that are pushing back on the jihad, holding on to our land, defending us. And it's almost like the weirdest thing about pro-Israel stuff is that, like, just like Israel is the most just and the most right thing, so too is Jewish presence in Judea and Samaria. But fear has crept in. And
this is nothing new for APEC. They haven't changed. It's been 50 years since the Six-Day War. We were expecting something. You said to me, oh, there's going to be something about Jerusalem. For sure. It's 50 years. How can they ignore it? Ignored it.
Right. But we're not going to. But APEC, what's so great about APEC is that they're able to bring 20,000 Jews together. For me, by the way, that itself is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to bring Jewish people together. And the people that are here, they love Israel. Now, the messaging has been tame, anemic, lame so far, certainly with regard to this issue. Why is this issue so important? Not only is it about rights, not only is it about pushing back on the jihad, it's also about the claim that is being so often proffered against us. This is the claim. Outside of APEC yesterday was a huge protest, and that protest was all about the settlements, the occupation. That's what they're attacking us on. And we give lame answers to that attack. People say,
well, we don't allow the discussion at all, which is what happened in APEC. All these students there that we were seeing, college students who don't know anything and want to know. Terrific opportunity, like you just said, get all these kids together. Tremendous expense to bring them all in here. Tremendous energy there with all these pro-Israel people. And nothing. Are they going to be able to come back out and be able to do anything more to defend Israel than they could 3 days ago? But this specific event that we had tonight was a first. So tell us a little bit about that.
So I was going to get exactly to that point, that exactly what you just said, which is that I like how you framed it also. You come out of the convention, a pro-Israel convention, you don't know how to answer the simple protest that's facing. That's a great, I really like that imagery, and it's 100% true. This event was in order to counteract that. And this is not in any way an anti-APEC event. This is a plug-in, an addendum, an
A plus one.
A plus one. And it's here to tell people this is a big issue. Jews care about this. Israelis care about this. Non-Jews, Americans care about this story. And we made a really beautiful event. The Yesha Council got a lot of money together. We brought in wines. We brought in chalva. We brought in food from Judea and Samaria. We brought in dates. People actually ate from Judea and Samaria, which I always think is so important. And especially, of course, the wines. All this was great and was a celebration, but it was also a message. This is an important issue. And the fact that we had four ministers sitting there. So we had Tzachi Hanegbi, who's a minister in the Prime Minister's office. We had Eli Ben-Dahan, which is the deputy defense minister and a rabbi. I had a line that I said, you know, it's messianic times when a rabbi is the head of Jewish defense. We had Tzipi Chotubeli, the amazing Tzipi Chotubeli, just a real powerhouse person, and a deputy foreign minister of Israel, and also, by the way, a great person and a great woman. And we had one more, which was Gallant. And this was an interesting person that I had not met before, a real classic Israeli super soldier type, who's the minister of construction. housing and construction. And you know, some of these people, by the way, are they've had great records on Janine Samaria and some iffy records as well. Mm-hmm. But they found the need to represent themselves here. They understood the power of this event.
I think we've got the momentum. I do.
Well, if I segue to the issue of momentum, I would have to say, well, the momentum, you know, it's kind of funny you're saying that, like, if you look at it as a whole, it seems like we're on the run. But in truth, you're right. And what I think is that what you mean by momentum is what I told Sheila Adler, who's the CEO of the Yesha Council, the Council of Judea and Samaria, is that there's only one real takeaway from this, which is next year we have to make it bigger. That's really the real takeaway. And we have to do great PR and really show it to the people. We have to make it even, you know, one of the things I said when I was emceeing was like, I saw people are, you know, photographing with their phones. I'm like, you're not doing it even enough. You got to get it out to the world. You got to get this out to the world.
I find it interesting that Tzachi Hanegbi was here because he, if I think of one person who's a classic politician, and he tends to sense out, to smell out who's on the rise. That is why he's been in Israeli politics for so long. He's been a survivor. And sometimes he's like switches around a little bit. If he's here, that said to me a lot because I think he realizes, and that's why I use the word momentum, there's a shift now, not yet in the States where they're still talking two states. There's a shift in Israel about sovereignty, and the debate is now about how much, not giving it away, but how much are we going to take for the, you know, annex or put Israeli sovereignty on initially. And there, I think, to see him want to be affiliated with this is a very interesting thing. I don't know if anybody understood that.
It's a very good point you're making, and I'll actually swing the pendulum back the other way for a second. On the one hand, what you're saying is we had Israeli politicians here, and there's a momentum about Israeli politics. But we're in here in Washington, and we're trying to effectuate American Jewish consciousness, American consciousness, and certainly American administration. This event sent a signal. That signal is going to ping. It's going to reverberate. And there's, by the way, there's a lot of great young people here. I meet great young people here who want to ping it out also. And different organizations a lot. I wish I could have mentioned every single one of them because there's so many heroes in this room. So many heroes, really. And at the end, we're fighting to normalize Judea and Samaria. We're fighting for it to be recognized. And yes, there are some democratic issues. There are issues with the minority Arabs that live amongst us, and there's issues with the popular jihadist ideology that reigns right now supreme in the Middle East world and certainly in Judea and Samaria and the West Bank. And there are problems there, but the answer is not to run away. And not only is it not the answer, but there's also a fact, which is we're not going to run away. And that's got to reverberate out. That's got to be sent out. And I think this was a great event. I wanna single out one person here. A lot of people gave me a lot of accolades because I was front, but you know, and you have to have you have to know how to do front stuff, and it's own skill and its own thing, and I had the great honor to do it. But the real person behind this whole thing is Eli Piepsch, and I'm one of the only people who knows how to pronounce his name properly. I've heard many people mispronounce it. It's Piepsch. It's like a French name, and Eli. Just quietly, behind the scenes, organized the venue, organized the foods, and he did it with such class. He personally behaved with no pressure. No sign of tension. I'd be like a chicken with my head cut off. He handled it, and there was, of course, the ancient Jewish food of sushi was here, and we celebrated. Yeah. Listen, sushi's great. We love sushi. I love sushi. And it was good sushi. And Ellie just did an amazing, amazing job of organizing this. And Danny Dayan spoke, and he was fantastic. And just the speakers all spoke short and tight and blessed. And one of the things I said was that blessing, according to our commentators, the word blessing in Hebrew, bracha, means more of, ribui, plurality of, more of it. And that's what we want. We want more houses. We had the Minister of Construction. I ribbed him a little bit. Like, you got to build more, buddy. You're right that there's a pendulum swinging our way because we're right, because it makes sense, and also because we're tenacious. And of course, fate favors tenacity. We are tenacious because we have, and like a person like you, what makes you so tenacious, Eve, is that it's a deep justice. It's a deep knowledge of it. It's a historical. All the pieces fit. All the spiritual, historical, international law. It all clicks. It all clicks together.
We're the indigenous people, and we've come home, so there you go.
You know, I said to Sarah Stern from Emmett, I said to her, we're a funny group because on the one hand, we're the settlers and the pioneers. We're moving westward type of thing. We're moving to the West Bank. But we're also the indigenous people. So we're like, we're moving west to re-inherit. And the real word is resettlers. We're resettling our land. But we also have to do it professionally. And that's been something that has haunted us.
You're wearing a tie. I just want everyone to note, Yishai is wearing a very nice tie.
I bought a pink tie and I love it. And my wife made me buy the suit in England. But the we have to do things professionally. We have to do it with PR. We have to do it with political lobbying. No Trump administration, nobody's going to give us. But they have to recognize our efforts, understand that we're just and right. And the big problem is that we've got a shift policy of a lot of very entrenched bureaucratic ideas, academic ideas. To turn that ship is not easy. We're going to keep pushing. I don't expect that this excellent event is the end of the game at all. It's really the beginning. We have a long road and a fight that we have to make here for our truth. Here's the deepest truth that really I didn't even say in at the podium. And we're not going to, you know, it's hard for people to understand that the reason that the fight is so strong against Judea and Samaria is because our enemies sense that this is indeed something huge, that it's our spiritual anchoring, our historical anchoring. Our enemies are partially enemies of Jews, they're anti-Semites, and they're partially enemies of God.
They're enemies of God. I think this is a fight against or for God. I really do.
You're right. It's a fight against God. And so I don't expect them to back down very easily. And we're going to have to keep really, really at it. And we have to do it also very professionally. That has haunted us. We've been a lot of times, you know, good at sloppy and been good at physical warfare and at being tough. But we also have to know how to do it with finesse and with PR and with media and with politics and get what we want and deserve for our children and really for the betterment of the world in the end.
I was thinking just while you were speaking today and I was watching this whole event that I would love to say now that this has to be the next risk for peace. We've been told all these years we have to take a risk for peace. The next risk for peace is Judea and Samaria, is finally calling it home and standing up and saying it for the world, because it is a risk. Yes, we're going to have a lot of difficulties. People are going to get angry with us. It's not going to be simple. There are issues, but it is ultimately for peace. And that has been cast in the exact opposite way. But the only way for Israel to come to peace is to be strong and to be home and proud about it and letting that message go to our neighbors who understand very well what that means, what the attachment to land is. Something that not a few Israelis could learn from our neighbors, I think, also. Attachment to land goes a long way. For a long time, we didn't have that because we couldn't. And now it's back. Finally, thank God. So this was great.
Well, it was a big honor. It was a big blessing. And again, LEP Epsh and other people did a great job. One Israel Fund did a great job behind the scenes and the Yesha Council. I just want to say that I want to kind of conclude it by saying that I think a lot of folks come in AIPAC want to hear this stuff because they feel that they've been cut out from the truth. Even the Jewish organizations have been complicit at cutting them out from visiting the ancestral homeland.
Even the Jewish organizations? How about especially the Jewish organizations?
I think you're right. And you know, nobody knows better than you because you're in that field. And so we have what we call in Hebrew a bsora, a message, and a Christian terminology like a good news, like we have a message. We have a shofar blast of truth and salvation and good things. And we have to give it to our friends. We have to, and that's why again I want to come back to. I love AIPAC. I love AIPAC for bringing all these Jews here. You know, I love to see all these Jews here. And I know you've felt the same way, Eve, is that many people want to hear it. There's not as much. Everybody thinks that you're going to get a lot of pushback. You don't. People are like, oh, open my eyes. Thank you. And I think that's what we have to do. And we also have to do a tremendous focus on the children, the young people, the students. Yeah, that's it.
Because they are confused. They don't understand why be Jewish, why support Israel at all, because they understand inherently they're being given a mixed message. We have to unmix it. This was a great beginning.
Thank you, Eve. And also, Yasher Koach to you, or Chazaka Baruch in Sephardi Talk, for coming here. It's a real pain in the butt to come out to D.C. and leave the family and all that kind of stuff. And thank you to the wives or the husbands and to the kids that understand. You know, but we have to be here. And the only thing I can say is I hope to see you here next year, Eve.
Please, God. Thanks, Yishai. Woo! So that was a lot. I really hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed interviewing Eve Harrow on the Land of Israel Network. Once again, love always hearing from my listeners, eve@thelandofisrael.com. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, everybody. Thanks again to Ben and Tabitha and Jeremy and Ari and everybody who get me out on the airwaves or whatever we call them today on the internet. Have a great week, everyone. Once again, goodbye for now.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is Windows of Jerusalem Apartments. Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments offers luxury 5-star short and long-term rental apartments in the heart of Jerusalem city center. Elegant and modern, inviting and comfortable. The view, the location, the great apartments, and the staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com. That's windowsofjerusalem.com.
Do you like picking strawberries or blueberries in the spring and summer? What about grapes? If you were to take an experience like picking grapes and move it to the heartland of Israel, this is when an experience becomes prophetic. Young and old, singles and families are all invited on this adventure of a lifetime. I'm Joshua Waller with Hayuvel, and I invite you to join us on the mountains of Israel, where prophecy meets reality. Go to hayuvel.com, that's H-A-Y-O-V-E-L.com, for more information.